You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it. I want to welcome you to another episode of Ask a Black Doctor with myself, DJ Ambush, and Dr. Bukasi Dubé. How are you doing today, sir?
Man, I am doing well. I'm blessed. It's an excellent day to be alive. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm loving the news that I've been hearing as far as the numbers looking like they're going to start going down. So it would be great to not have to talk about COVID. It'd be great to be able to use Ask a Black Doctor to talk about some other things. I'm looking forward to that.
And there's a lot to talk about.
Right. So we have a guest with us this episode. Would you like to introduce the guest?
Man, it's an honor and a privilege to share this space with Colt Gill. He's the director of Oregon Department of Education and has led the K-12 efforts in trying to make sure that our kids are safe in schools as they return to schools, as they manage the pandemic and everything school related. He's been at the forefront of it. So honored and honored to have you join us, Colt Gill.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here and look forward to the conversation today. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So today we're discussing revisiting school safety during Omicron. Colt, could you just start giving us some of the top questions or some of the top concerns that you've had from parents throughout the school year? I know the school district has been able to offer, the Department of Education has been able to offer both in-person and distant learning and then hybrid learning in different school districts where it was possible. But what are some of the overall or consistent concerns that you've been hearing from parents?
Yeah, so I think as we've rolled into this school year at the department and from Governor Brown and in partnership with the Oregon Health Authority, we have really prioritized in-person learning to try to help our students get back to that ability to be with their friends, to develop strong relationships with adults in the system. You know, a trusted adult outside the home is a really an asset for our students. So we've really prioritized that. And in doing so, we've focused in on these layered mitigation protocols to make schools as safe a place as possible for students and limit the spread of COVID-19. So most of the questions we get are about that. They're about the use of face coverings and whether we should be requiring that or shouldn't be requiring that. About the availability of online programs for families that aren't quite ready to return to in-person learning, and about how we support especially students and staff members who might be more vulnerable to the impacts of COVID-19 for one reason or another. Those are a lot of the questions we get revolve around that.
How have the schools been handling PPE? Have they been providing masks and gloves when necessary for students?
So there have been a couple of different programs where we have been able to make mostly it's masks that we use at schools and then cleaning supplies, both for personal hand washing and for cleaning surfaces more regularly. But the Oregon Department of Education and the Oregon Health Authority have both been able to access face coverings that are both youth sizes and adult sizes for our older students from the federal government on several occasions. And we've been able to distribute more than 10 million face coverings of different kinds throughout the pandemic to our schools. And then through federal funds that are available directly to school districts are also have separate funds than what they typically use to operate schools to buy more face coverings and other kinds of supplies to help keep the doors open. We have supported their purchasing through developing statewide contracts. And some of them have been developed again by the Oregon Department of Education a few by the Oregon Health Authority and a few by the Oregon Emergency Management Department. So all of those entities have come together to try to develop strong contracts. So when districts are purchasing, they're not out there trying to develop an independent contract with a provider, but can buy onto one that's already been completed and is providing a pretty good deal to the districts.
Excellent.
So you bring up an interesting point called when you talk about the layered mitigation factors, right, that have been put in place. And we know that vaccines are probably the best mitigation factor we have out there. How has that played out in schools as you guys have decided whether or not to make it mandatory for kids to return to in-person, like some private schools have done? How has that played out?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the I agree with you, and again, and it's great to have you here, Bukosi, because you've been in on some of this as we rolled out different protocols throughout the last 24 months, frankly, and have been a key health advisor for Oregon Health Authority and for the Oregon Department of Education. I want to make clear throughout the podcast, so I won't repeat it many times, but I'll say it now. I'm not a public health expert, so I rely deeply on our partners at the Oregon Health Authority and the senior health advisors there to help guide our practices. And we have a graphic we can share that shows our layered mitigation efforts, and vaccination is the key effort that resolves a lot of issues with holding school in person. Face coverings help a lot as well, and there are other practices like physical distancing and airflow and ventilation, but vaccination resolves a lot of issues. So when our students and staff members are vaccinated and fully up to date on their vaccinations, then if they are exposed to COVID-19 and not showing any symptoms, they aren't required to quarantine, which means they have more days in school in in-person instruction. And that's really valuable for us right now. So in Oregon, we did require staff members in schools to complete their initial vaccination series. So the one shot of Johnson & Johnson or the two shots of Pfizer or Moderna. The booster is a choice at this point in Oregon for our staff members, but the original series is a requirement. That helped us keep our staff in front of our students all through the fall, through the Delta surge, and then through this latest Omicron surge. We have staff shortages in Oregon as it stands. And so when staff members were out either with COVID or out because they were exposed to COVID and in quarantine, that was really challenging to operate schools. So that that vaccination requirement really helped keep our adults in the system to better support our students. There is no requirement for students to vaccinate in Oregon, but we do highly recommend it for the same reasons we do for the adults. It does help protect students from getting a serious case of COVID-19. It does help reduce the spread of COVID-19, and it absolutely helps keep kids in-person instruction on a daily basis. So those are really strong reasons to make sure that our children are vaccinated. When we first started the school year, vaccinations were not available for all students. That came later in the fall. So now all of our kindergarten on through 12th grade and beyond students are eligible for vaccination. And we do partner up our school districts with local public health authorities and other health partners to offer clinics. This is a really good time to make sure that if your child isn't vaccinated, to go out and seek a vaccination. They're still really easy to access in Oregon, and it will help once we get to March 31st and the decision for universal masking in schools becomes a local school district decision. And I think that vaccination becomes even more important at that point.
I was just going to ask you that with that change on the 31st, do you anticipate any change in the requirements as far as vaccinations, the teachers having to get boosters at that point, or requiring vaccination from, for the students, just to, try to stay on top of things?
Yeah, I don't think that we will see any staff member requirement changes at that point. And I haven't heard that discussed at a state level. I think that maintaining the current level of vaccination is probably what will remain through this school year. Student vaccination requirements go through a long process in Oregon. So there are, you know, about a dozen different immunization and vaccinations that are required for enrollment in Oregon schools now. And there is a process to exempt oneself or have your child exempted from those vaccinations. And those include longstanding vaccinations that most of us have for smallpox and chickenpox and rubella, all the different childhood diseases and serious ailments that we are aware of. To get another vaccination added to that list goes through a process that is led by the Oregon Health Authority, and it takes quite a long time and requires a different level of certification from the federal government before it begins. So there are discussions about that and the planning for that, but the process is not really started yet.
Dr. Rakosi, I can imagine that you would, members of the medical community would appreciate less public eyes on the process to decrease the amount of scrutiny on how long it takes for, a vaccine to be added to, as is a requirement for elementary school. Because I can remember not too long ago, I had no concerns about how long that process took. But now I'm like, yeah, there are vaccines, you know, immunizations we just have to have in elementary school. That was part of it. I remember my parents were late. I had to miss a couple of days of school because we weren't immunized properly. All right, go and now going back to school, without question, there was no overarching conversation about anyone's freedoms. It was all about our safety as a community. How do we best stay safe?
Yeah, so this conversation has been very, very interesting, how it's played out as here in this country, and actually in the rest of the world, right? We're seeing the protests in Canada and in France and in other places where people are protesting these mandates. And it's quite unfortunate because this was a phenomenal opportunity for us to come together as a human community to fight this this alien invasion, COVID-19 invasion, right? And yet it feels as though we failed in many ways. And we have not set a good example for our kids, right? Because our kids are watching us at every step and monitoring everything we do. And they do as we do, not so much as we say. They're always doing as we do. So hopefully we can, going forward, we can set a better example. So, you know, a lot of schools, I noticed that a lot of private schools made vaccines they made vaccines mandatory to return back to school, especially with early on with when vaccines became available to 12 and older, where some schools have and I think Cole, you have these stats better than I. We have seen less closures at those schools where less missed days at the schools where they made vaccines mandatory. I wonder if that's an argument enough to sufficient argument to make vaccines mandatory at schools going forward. But again, you did say that it's OHA. There's a process behind all of this, and hopefully our policymakers will lead us that way.
Yeah, I agree. I hope so as well, and I know that I will be supportive of required vaccination. Again, with the way Oregon's law works, families that do have, some kind of concern about it can apply for an exemption and get that exemption for their children. But to have far more children vaccinated in our schools, I think really will help protect the number of school days that those kids can access, and the more time that they have to interact with their peers and again with those trusted adults in the system for them. Every one of those things is an asset for our students and helps them, make it through each and every day and and helps them learn and achieve their goals. So,
yeah. Yeah. Can you touch a little bit on the process or the mechanism by which when parents don't feel safe, when parents don't feel as though their schools are following the right protocols to keep schools safe, what's the process that parents can employ to make sure that this is evaluated?
Yeah, great question. So this school year, most of the protocols from the state, from the Oregon Health Authority, from Oregon Department of Education, are recommendations. They are all based on CDC recommendations for the school year. And again, all of them are aligned to ensure that our kids can be at school safely and that we can maintain that school setting so that students aren't infecting one another and getting ill and then not being able to be there. So it's all designed to keep kids at school. Every school in Oregon is required to post their safety plans for COVID-19 on their website. So at the school district or at the private school website or a charter school website, all of them should have it posted on their website. If you don't see it there, then you can go to oregon.gov/readyschools and you'll see a link from our website to every single private school, charter school, and school district in Oregon, and you can take a look at their plans. With the federal funding that came to support in-person learning this school year, those school districts are also required to resubmit every 6 months. So between now and March 31st, we'll also see districts updating those plans, and that will be in relation to their local decisions around universal face covering. If a family decides that a school district has posted protocols and they don't believe that they're being followed appropriately, there are a couple of things that can happen. So they could initially go to the school district and ask that question, try to resolve that complaint at the local level. If they don't feel like they're getting the answers that they need there, or there's still a misalignment, we do have the Oregon OSHA, the Occupational Health and Safety organization here in Oregon, can take complaints. They can take complaints anonymously and protect complainants if that's a concern. And they have been and continue to investigate schools who are not in alignment with the regulations, with the requirements. But the recommendations are, again, local district decisions. So the third thing that can happen is if a family just does not feel like the school is operating in a safe way, they can choose online options in Oregon. Nearly every school district offers online options again this school year. Fewer students are using those, but they are available out there. And then there are also multiple public charter schools that operate online only that are available to families.
Yeah. Online learning is very interesting. Do we have any studies that or any way of measuring if there is loss of learning with the online schooling as opposed to in-person?
Yeah, so we will have quite a bit of information as students complete, at least academic information, as students complete assessments this spring to understand what the impacts of the pandemic overall. But you know, one full year for many students in Oregon was online. So we'll begin to understand what those impacts were like. We have a mix of different public charter schools. They're called virtual public charter schools in Oregon. There's a little bit more of a dozen of them and a number of district operated online programs. All of those programs, you can go to the Oregon Department of Education website, and there are posted what we call at-a-glance reports that do share the outcomes for those schools. And these continue during COVID, but also predate COVID times. So you can take a look at graduation rates. You can take a look at performance on English language arts and mathematics kinds of assessments. And you can look at attendance and the ratio of teachers to students. All of those things are available for families that want to take a look at those programs and understand what kind of success they might be having with students.
Excellent. Can you speak to any of the recommendations around extracurricular activities, such as youth sports?
Yes, so I can start, and I'll just be really clear here too, that earlier in the pandemic, worked a lot side by side with Bukosi and the OSAA, the Oregon Athletics and Activities Association, to help develop some of the guidelines for that organization as they thought about how to operate school sports in Oregon. So please jump in, Bukosi. but where we are at right now in Oregon is that through the Omicron surge, and we are coming down from it now, and we're coming down pretty rapidly, nearly as rapidly as we as the surge came on. Case rates are declining, daily case counts are declining, hospitalizations are beginning to reduce. So that's really good news. But during the surge, we put out two what we call school health advisories, one at the beginning of January and one at the beginning of February. And in those school health advisories, we did address extracurricular activities. And we gave two pieces of advice. The first was that during the surge, it would make sense to pause those activities, because when individuals are together in close quarters, especially indoors, and many of the winter sports are indoors, the doctors were very clear that they would see rapid spread of COVID-19 from one person to another. The second piece of guidance that we put forward to school districts was that if you do go ahead and operate in extracurricular activities, including sports, that you should follow the same protocols that you do during the school day to prevent spread of COVID-19. Now, school districts made a variety of different choices. So we had a number of districts that did go ahead and implement the same protocols. And we had a few districts that reduced the number of activities that they offered. The districts and families all, you know, really understand the benefits of kids continuing to participate in those kinds of activities. For some of our students, that's one of the reasons that they come to school day after day, is to be a part of those team building activities and kinds of environments. So I think it was a tough decision for school districts. They worked, I think, mostly pretty hard to reduce spread, but we did see spread in after school activities during the Omicron surge as well.
Yeah, it's we know that these team building activities are very, very good for kids' mental well-being, their self-esteem, and it's a good exercise in just, you know, being able to play well with others, right? So it was an interesting balance to see how this was managed, and I think for the most part we didn't see that much spread with sporting activities, at least the ones that followed. The ones that adhered to the mitigation factors that were being recommended.
That's really encouraging to hear, because as contagious as Delta was, Omicron was significantly more contagious. And yeah, the mitigating factors were, you know, still helpful in keeping the spread down. That's really, really encouraging to hear, honestly.
So as we go forward and as we take off, as the masking mandate is removed March 31st, and whether or not that continues becomes school dependent or even school board dependent, it looks like we're going to have a hodgepodge of what's going on, whether or not these policies are continued. What sort of, how have schools responded to that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's been very, really challenging for local districts to determine what steps they want to take. And you're all likely aware that in Oregon, there are really mixed views on using masks right now. So we have a lot of folks in our community who believe that we should have moved away from masking some time ago. They think that masking is actually harmful for our students and their growth and development, their learning of language skills, and their mental health and kind of peer connections and interactions. So we have a lot of pressure in our local communities to, when the state says that it's a local decision, for that local decision to be masks are optional. We also have a number of folks in our schools, because they're very reflective of our community at large, of individuals who have specific vulnerabilities to COVID-19. It could be just because they're unvaccinated, and maybe that's for a medical reason, and it could be because they have underlying health conditions that could make COVID-19 a much more severe disease for them. And those students and staff members should have the same rights to an in-person education experience as those folks that are not as vulnerable to COVID-19. So it's a really tough decision for our school districts to determine what's right for their community. We've asked them to partner with their teachers, with their other education staff, to partner with their local public health authority to understand the local COVID experience in their community, and to work with their school board through processes that are inclusive of the communities that they serve, all the communities that they serve, so that they can make a decision that feels right for their community, and to not lock in that decision as a permanent one, but to make sure that the community knows that as surges come and go from COVID-19 or new variants are introduced, that a district that says on March 31st that they will make masking optional may at some point, even this school year, need to change that decision to control a fast-moving variant of COVID-19 in their community. I think that, again, challenging for everyone to be making those decisions instead of at a state level, but we do see different impacts in different parts of the state, and mm-hmm. our schools are so very different. So in Oregon, we have about a dozen school districts that serve more than 10,000 students in multiple schools. And we have about a dozen school districts that serve fewer than 10 students in a large school. And the same rules probably don't apply in both of those places in strong, helpful ways. So to give those decisions back to local communities feels like the right move at this time in the pandemic, when we're, and we're not talking about doing that until the end of March, when we expect hospitalizations to drop below Omicron levels, pre-Omicron levels, and daily case rates to reduce significantly.
Now, will schools still have the same access to, say, PPE, after this mandate is lifted on March 31st?
Yes, yeah, all the same supports are in place. There are a few challenges that schools are also working through. So in our recommendations, and again, most of these are recommendations, not requirements, but from the Oregon Health Authority, there are, you know, strong recommendations to local public health authorities about how we frame quarantines and isolation times. And some of those change in an environment that is universally masked versus one where masks are optional. And so that's another transition point that our schools are all navigating, because the disease and how it moves from one person to another hasn't really changed. So yeah. Just changing the rules about masks doesn't mean that how COVID-19 moves from person to person has also changed.
Right. You're not changing the rules for the virus. That's very interesting. We spoke to, you know, the impact of the community dealing with the virus specifically, but then also the impact on the community dealing with the protocols and the mandates. There have been, you know, some exciting school board meetings that have been taking place, rather spirited school board meetings, in an effort to make sure, you know, everyone is being heard and no one feels like they're on the fringe. What are some of the steps that you guys have been taking to, you know, hear out the people who maybe are vaccine resistant and having conversations with them that kind of, you know, give them the information that they need and bring them into the fold?
Yeah, that's a great question. I just want to touch first on the public meeting space and the importance for that to remain a civil and safe space for everyone. And we have had a few instances in Oregon where school board meetings have become unsafe places that have had to close down until order could be restored, sometimes with law enforcement entering the fray and having to restore some level of safety to the space. And that, you know, that doesn't help anyone. I don't think it helps get the message across that was intended by the visitors. It doesn't ensure that a board has the opportunity to listen to that opinion. So I just strongly urge that, you know, Oregon has a strong history of acting as a community and in support of all the members of the community. And we really need to make those spaces safe so that everyone can come and share their opinion and have it heard, and regardless of what side of the issue they're on. So we have taken some steps to provide school boards with some guidance to help make those safe spaces and for school board members to protect themselves. Unfortunately, some of our school district leaders, whether superintendents or school board members, have been targeted by certain groups and have been threatened in certain ways. So we're trying to provide them information for personal safety plans and to hold safe meetings. But to your point, it is really critically important that they have a space where everyone can be heard. Most of our school districts in Oregon have public comment period at the beginning of meetings. That happens whether meetings are online or in person. And they also have ways to write to all of the school board members. So if you can go to their web pages or call the district office, they can give you the information about how to send a message that can be read by all the board members in that district.
Speaking of vaccines and vaccination clinics, have you guys organized any at schools? Have you taken on that role, or has that largely been left to the communities themselves?
Good question. So mostly the vaccinations and the clinics that are held at schools are developed in partnership with a local, like a county public health office. The Department of Education has held some. The Department of Education actually operates just one school in the state. Otherwise, we have 197 school districts, and they operate the schools directly across the state. But the one school that our department directly operates is the Oregon School for the Deaf. And we have held vaccination clinics there that have been open to that community, but also the broader community in that neighborhood and folks at the Department of Education as well. So we've been encouraging that. We've been creating partnerships and making sure that folks know where to develop those connections with their local public health authority to hold those kinds of clinics. And many, many school districts have been holding clinics.
Excellent, excellent. We do have some upcoming clinics, clinic events. Saturday, February 12th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Rosewood Initiative. Tuesday, February 15th from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Lloyd Center. And again, Thursday, February 17th at 8 a.m. from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. also at the Lloyd Center. This information will be in the description of the podcast episode, along with any of the questions that were asked and answered throughout this episode. Cole, do you have any final words for our listeners?
I first just thank you for giving time for this conversation and allowing me to join in. And what I think my biggest message is just what you just talked about. This is a time, even though we're coming down from Omicron, to take advantage of the opportunity to get a vaccination and ensure that you have a better chance of avoiding getting COVID-19. And if you do get it, that you have a much more mild case. So take advantage of that opportunity, and we hope to see more and more students in school every single day.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for your time.
Cole, thank you very much for taking the time to do this. This is awesome. Whenever we share information, whenever we dispel misinformation and misconceptions out there, it's it is because of leaders like yourself that that we can do that, and hopefully we can have more people tuning in and sending in their questions, and we can address them with the experts that we bring on.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. And as Dr. Bokosi did mention, just a reminder, if you have any questions for our guests and also for Dr. Bokosi Dubé, you can go to thenumbers.fm. There is a question form right there. You can just put your question in there and we'll bring it up on the next episode. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Peace.
Peace. Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.